Good morning. The Senate Education Committee meeting is called to order. Today is Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. The time is 9:04. We're meeting in State Capitol Room number 205. Senators in attendance are Senator Stevens, Senator Hughes, Senator Machicki, and myself, Chair Senator Holland. I believe Senator Begich will not be in committee today. We do have a quorum to conduct business. Thank you to Jeannie, our recording secretary, and Alex, our moderator for today. As a reminder, please silence your cell phones. First up, we will bring Senate Bill 94 back up in front of the committee and open the bill for public testimony. Senate Bill 94 is regarding education and supplemental loans program. Does any member of the public wish to offer testimony on SB 94? I see no one in the room wishing to offer testimony. And I believe online I see, Chad Hutchinson, State Director of with UAA. Mr. Hutchinson, if you can hear me, please state your name and put yourself on the record and begin your public testimony.
Thank you, Chair Holland. For the record, my name is Chad Hutchinson, State Director of the University of Alaska System. And we drafted a letter of support for this bill back in March. And the good news is our support continues. Generally, we think there's wisdom in ASLC having flexibility for determining loan amounts for eligible borrowers. It allows more potential borrowers opportunities and connects them with the university system, which is hoping to strive and to provide more opportunities for those potential borrowers. In the broad scheme of things, the bill aligns with President Pitney's vision to boost enrollment, so we're not as dependent on state dollars moving forward, which I think many in the legislature are sympathetic to. So it's a win-win for all involved, and our support for this bill continues. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Hutchinson. We will do one last solicitation for anyone wishing to offer public testimony. Seeing none in the room, seeing no more online, I'm going to close public testimony. Public testimony is now closed. And I will ask, are there amendments to SB 94? I believe we have amendment number one.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
I will object for explanation.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment is intended to make clear that the goal of the loan program and its expansion is to achieve economies of scale as indicated in the commissioner's presentation. In our first hearing on this, we had a lot of concern because we are adding folks who are no longer residents of the state. And in the second hearing, it really became clear, and in conversations with Senator Effort in my office, that really the bottom line, the point of this is to help Alaska residents, because by expanding the pool, we get an economies of scale, which can help keep the rates down and help keep the corporation afloat as far as their revenues. So we just want to make it clear that this is all about an economies of scale for the benefit of our own Alaskan students. I might have worked with Ledge Legal to word a little bit differently, but in light of the time and not getting it till rather the last minute, it is what it is. But that is the purpose, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I will also apologize to the public. We did just get these amendments a little late, and I don't believe we have them posted yet online, but we will get them up shortly. Is there any discussion on amendment number one? Senator Machicki.
Yeah, just for the maker of the amendment, what does this actually accomplish other than explaining that the entire reason for the bill, just clarifying that the entire reason for the bill is to achieve economies of scale? Is that kind of what it's about, highlighting the purpose of allowing folks that are no longer residents to enter into a new loan agreement?
Senator Hughes?
Yes, it is, because, you know, we tend to prefer our own Alaskans, kind of Alaskans first, and it is for that reason. And it is also to kind of keep that charge in front of the commission that that they need to be watching for that. Is this actually beneficial to our students? And if the scales would ever tip the other way, that they would reconsider this policy.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Senator Hughes, so what you, if I understand this, basically you're saying that the more students we have in the loan program, the lower the loans may be in price, the loan cost. Is that where I'm understanding or not?
We could bring Santa Effort on. She is supportive of this, and it didn't impact anything fiscally. I think it's more to make sure the revenue is flowing through the corporation so that they can help Alaskans. And I don't know if it would actually impact rates, and maybe I misspoke when I said that, but it's to shore up the revenue foundation for the corporation.
I believe the idea is we don't want to increase our expenses to expand this program, but we want to make the program more economical as it gets larger. Senator Hughes.
Yes, and just in case any are listening, part of it is, and as it, I think it reassured us in the last hearing too, was to understand that the credit score requirement is very high for this, so it's, we're not putting ourselves at risk, but we can expand our pool.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Thank you, Senator Stevens.
Thank you.
I will remove my objection. Is there any further discussion on amendment number one? Is there any objection to amendment number one? Seeing none, amendment number one has been adopted. Next up would be amendment number two by Senator Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move amendment number two.
And I will object for explanation.
This amendment two was birthed as a result of our last hearing and then a conversation with Ms. Efford in my office. And again, it's very much similar to the last amendment, ensuring that the benefits are to Alaskan students. And this would add that the commission must evaluate and report the benefits. And so that triggers an annual review, which she said they were likely to do anyway, and it's just part of their process. So it, again, doesn't trigger a fiscal note, and it's just good practice, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Is there any further discussion on amendment number two? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, amendment number two has been adopted. Are there any further amendments? Seeing none. Is there any further debate on Senate Bill 94? Seeing none, what is the will of the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate Bill 94-32-GS1644-A, as amended, be reported from the Senate Education Committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
I just want to confirm that, was it 32-GS1644-A?
Yes, 32-GS1644-A.
I apologize, I think my hearing aids are acting up today. Without objection, Senate Bill 94, version alpha, as amended, has passed from the Senate Education Committee. We will now bring Senate Bill 34 before the committee. This is the first. Brief at ease. That had to take a brief at ease to sign some paperwork. All right, so we will now bring Senate Bill 34 before the committee. This is the first hearing on Senate Bill 34. Senator Stevens, would you care to introduce your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Stevens, Kodiak, I appreciate your hearing this bill, Senate Bill 34. This bill is a result of Alaska Educational Challenge meeting that occurred maybe 3 or 4 years ago, called by Commissioner Johnson. Probably over 100 people. I know Senator Hughes was involved in that as well, but we got together in Anchorage several meetings, and one of the issues that came out of that was the need to look at some solution to the state tribal educational compact issue. And so this is a result of that, and I appreciate all the effort that so many people involved in it. I know there's so many things that you're asked, that we are asked to read, and it becomes pretty difficult. But I would ask you at some point to look at the Alaska Native Studies proceedings from the Alaska Native Studies Conference in 2013. You don't need to read the whole thing, but the introduction and the conclusion are quite interesting. And what they really show is that students, native students, particularly our village students, face problems in education. Often they drop out at a much higher rate than other students, and they don't graduate from high school as compared to other students in Alaska. So it's quite an interesting read, and I think it'll help you to get the background of this bill. So then if I could launch into the bill itself, compacting is a process. It's a complicated process, but compacting would allow the state of Alaska and Alaska Native tribal entities to come to an agreement that formally recognizes a tribal entity's authority to operate and oversee a K-12 school. These state tribal education compact schools are public schools, STECs we'll call them, so you hear that several times, state tribal education compact schools. They're open to all students. They would offer a unique culturally rich combination of both Western education as well as millennial-old tribal education models. This bill sets up the process for Alaska tribes to contract directly with the state of Alaska, with the commissioner, so they can control their own schools. This direct relationship with the state allows tribes to leverage funds that previously have been paid to school districts for educational enrichment that directly benefit Native students. The benefits of tribal compact schools include more Indigenous history, culture, language in the curriculum, a more intimate community support and experience for Native students. And again, I encourage you to look at some point at what happened in Washington State when they tried to do this. It seemed to be a success. It helps help educating our Native students so that they graduate more often and they don't drop out of school. So that's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stevens. I see Mr. Tim Lampkin is here. Mr. Lampkin, would you care to place yourself on the record and present the sectional analysis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tim Lampkin, staff to Senator Stevens. Before you should be version A alpha of the bill. Before I begin, I'd just like to volunteer that you're going to find that this legislation and this sectional is modeled after our state boarding school statutes contained in Title 14. And with that in the background here, I'll proceed with the sectional. In every way, this would be applicable to how we crafted our state boarding school, and for that matter, to some extent, how we have approached charter schools in our state.
Thank you.
So Section 1 is AS 1407165A, relates to the duties of the State Board of Education, and it amends their duties to include adopting regulations associated with this state tribal compact schools, hereafter referred to as a STEC. Section 2 is AS 1416300, which is the heart of the bill. It establishes the State Tribal Education Compact Schools program to include that the commissioner may enter into compacts with federally recognized tribes through an application process. And that process must include that the local governing board for a federally recognized tribe to pass a resolution and have provisions for specific grade levels, compliance, dispute resolutions, record keeping, and other standard items associated with common contract law. AS 1416310 specifies that a STEC will be considered a school district and must follow existing statutory requirements as other school districts do. That includes a number of items here that I go through. District operations, that is to say things like defining a school term, the days in session, holidays, miscellaneous provisions consistent with other school districts, follow state board regs unless the board specifically exempts, that is the state board specifically exempts the STECs from such regulations, authorizes school districts to establish and participate in the services of regional resource centers, requires auditing, authorizing cooperation with other existing school districts, prohibits the employment of a relative of the chief school administrator. Nepotism prohibits discrimination based on sex or race in their public education. Then we move into their school funding component. Receipt and expenditure of that funding relates to their establishing their basic need, relating to student count estimates, operating fund balances, and setting the procedures for payout to those public school funding, and imposing general requirements and the limits to the money paid. Subsection 3 there addresses teacher employment, retirement, associated with sick leave, tenure, salary, sabbatical leave, collective bargaining, and retirement system. 4 addresses students and educational programs, and it relates to students with disabilities, establishing health education standards, and relating to bilingual bicultural education. 14.16.320 establishes that a STEC may not charge tuition, and with some exemptions over the school age persons and extracurricular activities such as sports programs and that sort of thing, and that the school admissions may not discriminate, again, against race, age, grade level. If a STEC school has applicants that exceed their capacity, they may prioritize enrollment of tribal members. 14.16.330 establishes financial provisions for the STEC schools consistent with existing formula funding for a school district and for purposes of applying their Title I and other federal funding. 14.16.340 regards employees as them being state employees and provides employment preferences for those who are a member of a federally recognized tribe. Section 3 is 14.17.300A, relates to the Public Education Fund. It is amended to allow not only that we're funding school districts and the state boarding school, but also specifically can directly appropriate to the state tribal education compact participants. Section 4 is 14.17.400B, in the instance of a shortage of funds, and again, this is consistent with language for other school districts and so forth, that short of a fund, the department is directed to reduce district funding on a pro rata basis, amended to include the similar pro rata reduction for STEC schools. Section 5 is 14.17.445. This is a new subsection that includes funding for STEC schools inside the foundation formula for purposes of calculating its basic need. 14.18.110B is anti-discrimination laws, adds a new subsection to allow, again, in the event of a STEC school having reached or in excess of its capacity, that at that point it may choose to prioritize its employment and student enrollments firstly to those members that are members of that federally recognized tribe under the compact. Section 7 relates to compulsory school age, in which has a number of exemptions from compulsory attendance, and is amended to include an exemption for students enrolled at the STEC school. Section 8 is 1430-186A. It relates to special education services, and it's amended to include STEC schools being required to provide such services for students with disabilities enrolled in their STEC school. Sections 9 through 12 are a number of statutes there, 1430-358, 1443-849-5, 1443-915-F2, and AS-2196-070-G1 are all conforming definition references to include a STEC school as being considered a school district. Sections 13 and 14 relate to the provisions under which a union may strike and is amended to include a STEC school. Section 15 is 3935-160C, relating to our retirement system. Also a conforming amendment to include both the employees of a STEC school and the STEC school as the employer being required to contribute to the retirement system. 16 relates to also to the retirement system. It's 3935-160D, conforming amendment to include STEC employer as paying a member's PERS contribution, or rather TERS, in the event the member is assaulted while on the job and subsequently on unpaid leave. Section 1719, AS 3935300C, 3935310C, and 3935330D, also relating to the retirement system, are conforming amendments to include STEC employees as state employees and contributing time served under the state's retirement program. Section 2021 is AS 4320014G3, 4707063D3, relating to Medicaid eligibility, education tax credits, conforming definitions, and being amended to include STEC schools as being considered a school district. And finally, Mr. Chairman, Section 22 is transitional language giving regulatory authority to the Department of Education to develop regulations and to help implement the STEC program within 1 year after we implement the enactment of this bill. That concludes the sectional, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Lampkin. We do have invited testimony today, but I'll give the committee an opportunity to ask a few questions if there are any. Seeing none at this time, we'll move on to invited testimony. First up is Natasha Singh, General Counsel from the I'm too many years south of I-10 in Louisiana, from Tanana Chiefs Conference. Please put yourself on the record and begin your testimony.
Hello. Can you hear me all right?
Yes. Natasha Singh, General Counsel from Tanana Chiefs Conference.
Thank you for inviting us to educate the Education Committee on the history and opportunities in tribal compacting. My name is Natasha Singh. I'm from Stevens Village. I reside in Fairbanks, where I raise my family and work for Tanana Chiefs Conference, a tribal health and social services consortium that provides services to Alaskans living in the interior villages and tribal members living in Fairbanks. TCC is one of the 25 co-signers of the Alaska Tribal Health Compact with the Indian Health Service, likely the most successful compact in the history of the Indian Self-Determination Act. And I will be talking about that compact today. Alaska, the nation, and the world learned recently just how successful the tribal health system is because of our efficient ability to distribute the COVID-19 vaccine to Alaskans. I say the Alaska Tribal Health Compact is the most successful compact because, as a system, we are reversing severe health disparities for Alaska Native people in the most remote rural areas of the country while suffering significant underfunding by the United States Congress. The Alaska Tribal Health System is made possible because of the Alaska Tribal Health Compact, the legal agreement between the federal government and the Alaska tribal health entities and tribal nations. We are successful because tribal leaders are the decision makers, the planners, the strategists in the implementation of our own health care. Before the Alaska Tribal Health Compact, the chronic underfunding, the extreme rural nature of our villages, and most importantly, the absence of locally driven decision making resulted in a lack of quality provided by the Indian Health Service. The lower 48 tribes were also experiencing similar outcomes from the Indian Health Service. So in 1988, Congress passed the Indian Self-Determination Education Act amendments. The original act provided for the necessary authority for tribes to enter into agreements to carry out the responsibilities of the federal government, and the 1988 amendments addressed the inflexible bureaucracy and federal inefficiencies and increased the tribe's ability to redesign and tailor services to the specific needs of their communities. The takeaway here, history tells us agencies and bureaucracies resist the implementation of compacting despite proven success, and we continually need federal legislative support to fully implement the intent of this of self-determination. So soon after the amendments were passed, Alaska was offered an Indian Health Service demonstration project. Alaskan tribes and health entities quickly joined together to create a multi-party compact consisting of all those that wanted to join. This had never been done through IHS, but with the support of the Alaska IHS office and the determination of tribal leaders, the Alaska Tribal Health Compact was created. The true beauty of compacting is tribal leaders have the full authority to decide for themselves the best way to address our health care needs. We are forced to be accountable to our own people. Through the compact, we own our own health care information and can change our practices and redesign program service functions and services and activities to best fit our regional needs. When we have a program that is not properly funded, we are allowed the flexibility to reallocate funds as we see fit. We are able to cobble together funding streams that allow us to deliver our services efficiently and effectively. The health compact comes with strings attached. Co-signers are obligated to provide to the National External Audit Review Center an annual single organization-wide audit as prescribed by the Single Audit Act, and a copy is sent to the Indian Health Service and Federal Audit Clearinghouse. In addition, each year, the Secretary of Health and Human Services submits a report to the Senate Committee of Indian Affairs and the House Resources Committee detailing the level of need presently underfunded. Our boards are well and councils are well educated in the audit process and take pride in the lack of findings. We have robust accounting divisions that often include internal auditors that ensure the little money we receive from the federal government is spent properly. Currently, there are 25 co-signers to the compact, which is extremely diverse, ranging in size from single small villages serving less than 50 members the Alaska Tribal Health Consortium serving the entire state. Financially, the co-signers are very different as well, ranging from a small community health program under $60,000 a year to a large statewide medical center and environmental health program with over 2,000 employees and a budget of over $400 million a year. Together, the co-signers, the Indian Health Service, and our other partners make up the Alaska Tribal Health System. The system is rooted in community and tribally driven. The system consists of several layers of service, including community clinics, sub-regional clinics, regional services, statewide service, and contract health services. The system is interconnected through the system's sophisticated patterns of referrals and their primary and common mission, to improving the health status of Alaska Native people. This includes a coordination of care from local health clinics to sub-regional and regional facilities, which can also be referred to the Alaska Native Medical Center in Anchorage. As a co-signer, TCC relies on the Common Alaska Tribal Health Compact Perpetual Agreement that sets the general terms of the nation-to-nation relationship between the United States and Alaska tribes as it relates to the implementation of health care services. All the co-signers are under one health compact. We speak with one voice when we negotiate. In order to do this, all final common decisions affecting the compact, resource distribution, and others are made through the consensus process with tribal representatives of the co-signers. Once the co-signers agree, we have a strict protocol of negotiation rules which govern the annual negotiations process between the Indian Health Service and co-signers. The negotiations have been built on a foundation of good faith, trust, and the government-to-government relationship. The shared goals of our negotiations include holding productive negotiations by being prepared and sharing information early and often, executing agreements as quick as practicable, committing to being prepared for negotiation. These rules seek to ensure the parties stay transparent and honest with each other. Remind the parties that pulling a fast one does not result in better health outcomes for the Native people, and the continued relationship between the parties is just as valuable as the outcome of the negotiation. Because of the compact and the success of the system, we are literally changing the smiles of children in rural Alaska. Because of the dental health aid therapy program, we are seeing for the first time children in rural Alaska that are cavity-free. The Alaska Tribal Health System generates 18,000 jobs for Alaskans and contributes a total economic output of $2.4 billion in the state, much of which is an intake to the state economy. Due to its service population and statewide reach, the Alaska Tribal Health System represents a large part of Alaska's economy. In 2017, the system as a collective was 5% of the entire Alaska economy, which has probably increased in the past 4 years. The system is a larger sector of the state economy than the retail trade, the construction industry, the professional business and technical services sector, all arts and entertainment, all manufacturing, the information sector, utilities, and the agricultural forestry sector combined. As a vital part of the Alaska public health system, the Alaska Tribal Health System has served as a pillar for the state economy and as a partner with the state of Alaska. That partnership has not only generated net economic impact for the state, but it has also helped produce massive savings to the state budget in the form of Medicaid federal offsets. Again, thank you for listening today. I hope this presentation has offered you new information and encouragement on ways to partner with tribes. Tribes are amazing entities when given the authority and the trust to address our own issues. Even while suffering from a $30 billion annual shortfall, tribes across the nation are reversing health care disparities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Singh. Appreciate those comments. Hopefully we can do good work with the State Tribal Education Combat School, as was done with Tribal Health Compact. A question or comment from Senator Machicki?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Singh, could you, and I was here when we began a couple of the tribal compacts, as we've done our work here in the last several years. You brought forward some numbers on the benefits to the Alaska economy. Do you have those in one place that you could forward to the committee, please? I actually think that would be a valuable piece of information to have handy. Just collectively, the value that has been brought forth. You talked about a few of those things, but obviously you're pulling that from a document or something that you're working from. So could you please maybe collect that data and provide it to the committee?
Thank you, through the chair. Absolutely. The Alaska Native Health Board is the advocacy arm for our system. They compiled an economic study a few years ago, and I'll get that study to you and submit it to the committee.
Thank you.
And Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Natasha. I appreciate all you've told us about health issues and the federal compact, but of course the bill we're dealing with here is a state compact and an education compact. So if you have any comments on how the tribes may be able to work with us in establishing a state education compact, I truly appreciate hearing that.
Thank you. And my testimony on the health compact was just as a model as what we could do with education. And, of course, we support in the state compacting education for tribes. We think a bill would be extremely helpful to do that. We have seen on the federal side, legislation really is necessary to kind of push the administration along to continue the goals of self-determination and locally driven decision making. I think a bill that supports tribal compacting is important because, for one, it would first recognize tribes by the legislature, which hasn't been done. And it's important to note that tribes are political entities. We are the third sovereign that exists in the state, which is different from, say, charter schools or other entities that aren't nations. In general, we support this bill because tribes should be able to be given the authority to address their educational needs. They know why maybe they're not graduating their tribal members at the rates they need to. They know why our tribal members are sometimes have issues within the school system. And by compacting, it gives that authority at the local level to improve the school system. In another committee on the House side, Representative Krunk, who's from the Tanana Chiefs region, and he is an educator, said, well, you know, in our region down near Tok, Northway, Tetlin, we're doing a great job actually graduating Native students and working with the communities. And our response was yes, Representative Krunk, for those education systems that are successful, tribes likely won't want to compact. But there are specific tribes and sub-regions in Alaska that do want to compact. We think on the federal side, it's been successful with demonstration projects to start off small. We don't believe tribes would flood the gates in order to try to compact education. It would be a slow process of a few tribes kind of figuring out for the rest, and then other tribes can follow. But we would like to apply the lessons learned on the federal system to the state system and the potential for education compacting for tribes. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Singh. A follow-up from Senator Stevens?
It's just a comment. Thank you very much, Natasha, for your comments. You're right. I think it's going to be a slow process. It's very complex. It's not for everyone. It's going to be very difficult. Any group that decides to take this tribal education compacting to its conclusion. But, you know, it's not just for the most remote or smallest villages. You know, I can see this developing in a larger community like Anchorage or Fairbanks, where students want to learn the language of their ancestors, and they want to have more of an education that fits with their families. So I don't think we should look at it as just something that's going to happen out in the small villages. It could happen throughout Alaska. Thank you for your comments, Natasha.
And Senator Hughes.
Yes, thank you for your testimony, Natasha. And I appreciate the analogy and your description as far as the tribal health, because I think it has been very very successful. And part of that is because of the innovation and flexibility that you had, that you didn't have to necessarily follow some of the state restrictions, and that's why you could have the health aid model. That's why you could have the dental health therapist model, which has proved to be incredibly successful. And by state law, those weren't allowed. So one of the questions, of course we want, if we're going to have state tribal compact or STEC schools, we want the standards in those schools to meet or exceed the standards in all our public schools in the state, which I'm sure you'd agree you'd want that too. But I'm just wondering if the innovation and flexibility that you were able to have in developing the tribal health model, if you might find some of that restrictive, and I guess we'll sort through that. And just as a case in point, my husband years ago was supervising 50 health aides in 50 villages and then was the medical director of Tanana Chiefs Conference, actually, when they operated the clinic in Fort Yukon. I don't know that they still operate that clinic now, but and so we were exposed to the tribal health model and working with Dr. Doug Eby and implementing the medical home model, which looked at the whole patient and the whole family situation, not just medical, but dental and behavior health, very successful. But a lot of that was because you had the freedom to do things that maybe couldn't be done under state law. So that's something we'll want to think about, because if it's going to work for students, if it's innovative and you need those flexibilities, and it will improve academic outcomes, I know I, for one, would be open to that kind of flexibility. Now, the question I have for you is having to do something, it ties back again, because the tribal clinics years ago in the villages, if you were not Alaska Native, you couldn't be seen there. And as someone who loves Alaska Natives but is not Alaska Native, it became a problem for my family, because we'd have to fly into Fairbanks or Anchorage, depending which village we were living in. Later, the tribal clinics incorporated the community health center model, which in order to receive that funding, they had to accept all patients. And so that opened the door so that everyone in the community could be seen at the clinic. And that was a wonderful thing, and I'm very glad they did that. So one of the issues we will talk about, and we'll have a chance to have the conversation with the sponsor, is this bill puts a preference for Alaska Native teachers, puts a preference for Alaska Native students, so that if the capacity of a school was not large enough, they could limit it and prefer Alaska Native students. And you know, having lived and raised children in the villages, that would be a concern of mine. And I understand, you know, that sometimes you do have space limits. But I would hope that the goal would be, just like the clinics now accept all patients, that these schools would be open to accommodating every student in the community that wish to attend, and we wouldn't put up limits on those students. And I'm actually kind of concerned about the constitutional issue with that, because I know we're allowed under the Constitution to have veterans preference, but anyone can decide, anyone that's eligible, I guess, but there's no limits as far as who can join the military and someday become a veteran. So that's a little bit different of an issue. As much as we love the Alaska Native people, if we're not a born Alaska Native, we aren't. So we can't choose that. So I'm a little concerned about the constitutional issue, and perhaps we can look into that to see if there's a way we can work that out. But that's just my concern on the front. I do love the idea of taking ownership and responsibility for communities, which I think is what would happen with a state tribal school, and I do love the innovation and flexibility aspect if we could make that work. So I'm very open to this, and but I just thought I'd bring those issues up right at the front of this discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Thank you, Ms. Singh. Thank you for your presentation, for answering the questions that were presented. Next, we have the president for the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, President Richard Peterson. President Peterson, if you can hear me, please put yourself on the record and begin your invited testimony.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Just fine.
Thank you, Senator Hall and members of the Senate Education Committee, Gunakshish Howard, for inviting me to come speak with you today about tribal compacting. My name is Richard Peterson. I go by Chakya Ish, and I currently serve as the president of Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. I'd like to start off by acknowledging the Akwan and Takuquan, whose traditional lands we sit on here in Juneau. And I would like to say Gunakshish Hawa for allowing us to conduct our meetings on their traditional lands. I also want to just briefly state that I support the comments of Natasha Singh. Tlingit and Haida is the largest tribe in Alaska, with just under 33,000 enrolled tribal citizens across the state of Alaska, nation, and world. Quipkin Haida is a member of the Alaska Regional Coalition, a consortium of our four Native regional and tribal nonprofits and our regional tribe, representing 65,000 Alaskans from Ketchikan to Kotzebue. Collectively, we represent 100 rural communities, and we provide services to everybody in our communities, not solely to Alaska Natives. Compacting is a government-to-government agreement to administer programs. It takes a trust relationship repeatedly upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court, recognition of tribes' inherent authority to serve our citizens. Quipkin Haida already executes federal compacts with the Bureau of Indian Affairs on behalf of several communities in Southeast, administering sophisticated programs such as TANF, employment and training, child care, natural resources, economic development. Quipkin Haida is proud to have signed on to the Historical Tribal Child Welfare Compact Agreement between the State of Alaska and tribes in 2017. I think it's important to note that Quipkin Haida already delivers early care and learning services through Head Start program. While Head Start is not delivered through compacting, it's an education program we deliver in coordination with the state and federal governments. This is an example of how we might partner to deliver educational programs. I'd also like to point out that those programs serve Native and non-Native students alike. The state of Alaska supports local control in many ways, including in education. I think tribal compacting is the epitome of local control. Tribal compacting has the potential to enhance education delivery. As you heard Ms. Singh talk about our healthcare delivery, I think that the tribes have a history and we can stand up and prove that we can deliver on the education. As with so many other programs, it will depend on the details. Those details have everything to do with its potential for success. Alaska Native children comprise around 18% of Alaska's children. We owe it to our children and families to do all we can to enhance their education. To partner with the state through compacting, then we may be able to improve these children's educational outcomes. No one is more vested in the success of our students than we are. We stand ready to work with the state to design systems that allow us to work as partners and improve educational outcomes for all of our children. It's important to understand the ins and outs of compacting. It's important to build relationships and trust. Gunukchi Shawa again for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Thank you, President Peterson. Are there any questions or comments from the committee? Seeing none, thank you, President Peterson. And a brief at ease. All right, thank you, Senate Education Committee. Back on the record. Next, we will go to Elizabeth Medicine Crow. If you can hear me, please state your name and affiliation and provide any comments.
Hi, can you hear me?
Just fine.
My name is Elizabeth Medicine Crow, and I work as the President and CEO of First Alaskans Institute. And I want to thank Senator Stevens for the opportunity to share a few comments on the bill that he has introduced on education compacting with tribes in Alaska. I want to recognize as well that I'm calling in from my homelands in Klingarani, here in Keikwan or Cake, Alaska, and I want to express deep gratitude and appreciation for President Peterson and his comments, as well as Natasha Singh and her comments. Both of these leaders across Alaska have deep knowledge about what compacting is and how it works. And I was really excited to hear kind of the instructive analogy that Natasha provided at the outset. And then from a tribal leader, such as President Peterson, really kind of opening up what a government-to-government relationship could look like with the state of Alaska. I support compacting over public education with tribes in the state of Alaska. I do believe that we can be helpful in terms of really addressing some of the contents of this bill and offer our services and helping to do so. I wanted to share kind of a different perspective in terms of what might be possible. Senator Stevens opened his comments reflecting on the education outreach challenge of a few years ago, and I served on that tribal and community ownership committee. We were tasked by Commissioner Johnson to all of the different committees in that education outreach challenge were tasked with coming up with three innovative ideas that could transform Alaska's schools. Our committee met, and throughout our meetings, we were focused on trying to deliver three innovative ideas for our task. But what we concluded is that the true innovative idea is compacting with tribes, and that the other ones that we had talked about values and about ensuring student success, were all part and parcel of what a true partnership, a government-to-government relationship could create with tribally compacted education in Alaska. And so we put that forward as one item that was truly innovative. And the State Board of Education and the commissioner supported it and included it in their work moving forward. I think, however, the devil is in the details, as it always seems to be. And what is really necessary to advance a strong compact is a thoughtful, prepared government-to-government approach and relationship that is ready to sit down at the negotiating table as co-equals in defining out those authorities that Natasha spoke to and establishing that trust relationship. Let me restate that because I don't want to use a term of art that might seem to impart some sort of legal presentation. What I mean by is having a trusting relationship with one another across the table to center what is best for Alaska students and bring in tribal partners who really are extremely well-equipped to advance critical solutions to an education system that has continued to fail our Native students and also other students in Alaska. That was the call of the Education Outreach Challenge. And in order to do it, it means that tribes have to have the ability to design what their schools will look like, how they will run, who they will employ, what curriculum and values establish that school. And I think what's really exciting about that is you offer the opportunity to change the paradigm of schools that fail our students to schools that reflect and nourish our children. And one of the things that I love about our communities, our villages, and our tribal communities, even nestled within cities, is that we look after each other and we really try to address the hard issues and create intergenerational opportunities to strengthen everyone's knowledge and ability to succeed despite enormous challenges from systems and institutions. And what I think is really essential about a compacting bill with tribes is that it's co-designed.
so that the power and authority that is inherent in our tribal government and the power and authority that the state has can be married jointly in terms of really amplifying what could be created. But to hold tribes to the same framework as current state public education standards, well, it won't really change the result, will it? And so that's the thing about compacting. It is in and of itself the change agent. And I'm so excited that this bill was introduced, and also really excited to support really fleshing out what a compacting process could look like. And I really appreciate the comments that the Senator Stafford Tim Lamkin shared at the beginning as well in his sectional, which was to acknowledge that this was really crafted on state boarding school and state charter school statute, which is a great place to start, but it's also completely different than compacting. So I really appreciate, again, the conversation and the robustness of the conversation that will continue from here. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you, Shella.
Thank you, Ms. Medicine Crowe. Are there any questions or comments from the committee? And seeing none, I will step forward with a quick question for the sponsor or his staff. I looked over the bill and I saw cooperation with school districts regarding, it looked like district operations. But, and this really comes to mind because what we dealt with Senate Bill 111 and coordinating with schools. Will there be some coordination with the DEED or the school districts as far as could a compact school put a local school at risk? You know what I mean?
Through the chair, or Chairman Holland, Tim Lamkin, Staff Senator Stevens, you'll find that here shortly, I understand we have the commissioner online, and some key words that we've been hearing today are negotiate, trust, transparency, partnership in particular, and using the success model or model of success for with health to be applied for this education compact. You're going to probably hear, and I'm sure the commissioner will confirm, that in terms of coordinating with school districts, that certainly in the spirit of partnership when it comes to sharing things like curriculum or perhaps even things like maintenance services and that sort of thing, that those things will be negotiated and jointly utilized. You're also going to hear that there are two existing memorandums of agreement on the books with Tanana Chiefs Conference as well as the Kinnick Tribe Council. That I, the former of which TCC I have in my possession, I didn't want to share it at the last minute, but I'm happy to share those just so it's on the record that to give you an example of what we're currently working on. And with that, I guess I'd like to turn it over to the commissioner, if I may.
And I didn't want to put you on the spot on that because I'm also assuming that probably under the charter school guidelines, that is where that may exist. And so if this is modeled on the charter school, that's probably why it's not in here necessarily because it already exists. But I do see we have Commissioner Johnson on board. Commissioner Johnson, would you care to put yourself in the record and provide any testimony about Senate Bill number 34?
Yeah, thank you, Chair Holland. Can you hear me okay?
We'll probably turn you down just a little bit. You're coming through a little loud, but you can begin, and you're coming through clear.
Okay. Tell me if I need to whisper. Thank you. For the record, I am Michael Johnson, Commissioner of the Department of Education and Early Development. Thank you again for the opportunity to participate in your hearing today, especially regarding tribal compacting. I know you've had a busy morning already. My apologies for arriving here late, so I will be brief. As you begin this discussion, though, I hope to share just three important reasons why your work on tribal compacting is so important. I know it will take a lot of time, as Liz Medicine Crowe just mentioned, but as you know, this is a priority of the state board and something that inspires us here at the department. So here are three reasons why I think we really must work on tribal compacting for education. First, our current results demand it. The achievement gap in Alaska is tragic and has unfortunately been steady. We can't wait any longer. Far too many of our students find that they are on the wrong side of the achievement gap. They need us to be so dissatisfied with that reality that we will stop holding on so tightly to the current systems we have in place. Government-to-government tribal compacting agreements for providing an excellent education is demanded by our lack of success in closing the achievement gap. So it's time to be bold, to let go, and to try a different approach. Second, our character and our conscience requires it. Though I have no doubt that there were many, many great intentions, our public education system started out without the proper understanding, respect, and vision for Alaska students, particularly our Alaska Native students. Because of that lack of respect and understanding, and in some cases deliberate disrespect, our education system has not had a positive impact on Alaska Native languages and culture in particular. Our character and our conscience now requires that we demonstrate our respect and our value of Alaska Native culture and languages by entering into compacts for education so our students can restore and revitalize what has been diminished by ineffective education outcomes. And finally, the pandemic has given us proof that this is our pathway forward. When the history of this pandemic is written, tribes will receive credit for how they responded and helped care for all Alaskans. Many schools remained open throughout this entire school year because of tribal health. Many of our teachers, our students, and their families, Native and non-Native, were treated and or vaccinated through tribal health. Tribes have proven that when we let go of our systems and coordinate with tribal governments, good things happen for all Alaskans. So, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, our data demands it, our consciences require it, and tribes have proven that tribal compacting for education should be a priority for our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. A question or comment from Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and it's always great to hear Commissioner Johnson. He has a tremendous vision of where Alaska education should go. I appreciate his three points that he's made, how important it is. And the idea of being bold, I think, is key. You know, we could continue as things are, and from all the studies we've seen, things will not improve too much, particularly in our smaller villages. The lack of graduation, the low graduation rates, the dropout rates, we can continue that, but I think the commissioner has hit on the really important issue here about taking an action that may or may not work. We hope it will. There's a chance it will, and it has worked in other areas, as in health, as you've mentioned. No reason why it shouldn't work in the area of education. Mr. Chairman, you brought up the issue of your questioning. What impact this would have first I should say that according to the bill, these schools would be, these tribal schools would be their own district, and they would report to the commissioner, just as all districts do. And the intention, of course, I appreciate Senator Hughes' comment about the impact this may have and are making sure that we educate all kids. For example, in a small village of 200 people, there may be a quarter of the kids who are not Native, and we want to make sure that they are certainly educated. Maybe, Commissioner, you could talk to that issue, but also the bigger issue that you brought up is, could a school be closed, a regular school under the Department of Education, because of a tribal school being built in that area? Maybe, Commissioner, you could address those two issues if you would.
Commissioner Johnson.
Thank you. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, thank you. Tribally compacted schools would be open to all students, just as tribal health has served all Alaskans during the pandemic. And so it would be much the same dynamic. In terms of putting other schools at risk, I would just simply say that effective schools do not put other schools at risk. Ineffective schools put other schools at risk. And I'm confident that given the opportunity, tribal compacted schools will improve our outcomes in many places.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Are there any other questions or comments from the committee? Senator Hughes.
Thank you for your work in this area, Commissioner. We appreciate it. And I would say ineffective schools put students at risk as well, right? So that's why we want them to be effective. And I don't know if this would be for the staff or for you, but since we've got you and you're very familiar with how this works, I am wondering, as far as the requirements, I believe it's in section 2 that are outlined and that we went over in the sectional analysis, are there any requirements that we require of other non-state tribal compact schools that these schools would not have to meet?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, thank you. And yes, I agree with your first statement. Thank you, absolutely. So I'm sorry, I've been moving from meeting to meeting, so I don't have that section in front of me right at the moment. But basically, it would depend on the legislation. What you, as we work with tribes and others to figure out what requirements or guardrails would be in there, then that would dictate what they would have to comply with. I think there's some areas that we should explore in depth, such as, hiring more indigenous teachers. What does that look like? Do they have to go through the same certification process, or is there, you know, a different process, curriculum, assessment, those sorts of things? So I think those are all issues that we have to explore to, you know, answer your question before a bill is passed.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Follow-up from Senator Hughes.
Yes, and you know, just as we discussed, the dental health therapist health aid model were things not allowed initially under state law. In fact, I don't think dental health therapists still are, but they've been so incredibly successful for tribal health. Do you see the possibility that there might be some innovative things like that that maybe wouldn't be permissible right now under state law that we might have to expand? Because I want them to be able to have be innovative and flexible in that way, and the types of certification and things like that that they might need in a village might be a little bit different. Can you speak to that, please?
Yes, through the chair, Senator Hughes. I think, as I said in my testimony, we have to let go of some of those things and see, you know, what innovations and ideas come out of this kind of arrangement. So, yeah, I think there's great opportunity because of where we are right now, our context, and there's a great opportunity and great justification for exploring and pushing the edges of those sorts of requirements.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. And with no other questions or comments from the committee, thank you for your invited testimony. We will now set Senate Bill 34 aside for further review. Is there any other business before the committee? And seeing none, our next meeting will be Friday, April 23rd at 9 a.m., and we're adjourned at 10:15.